From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in a simple question. Do you think you handle your own finances very well? The FINRA Investment Education Foundation has been tracking Americans' attitudes about their own money, as well as their financial literacy. They've been doing that for years. Here's what they found in their 2016 study of more than 25,000 American adults. 81% of us would say, yes, we do a good job handling and understanding our finances. But then, only 37% of us could pass a financial literacy quiz of five basic questions plus one bonus. The New York Times called the study troubling and evidence that our knowledge about money is declining. 37% passed that basic quiz. It was 39% in 2012, 42% in 2009. So why are we going backwards? Well, we explore that question and more this hour. It matters for a number of reasons, not the least of which is this. The Times reports that, quote, that misplaced self-confidence in handling our money is putting millions of people at risk. They are vulnerable to major missteps and to exploitation by industry pros who may not have their best interests at heart, end quote. Lately, it seems like we're always dogging millennials about how little they know about money. Turns out it's really all adults who could use more financial knowledge. Well, ESL is teaming up with Rochester Young Professionals, and they're hosting a listening party right here at WXXI Studios next Thursday, September 29th. The topics will include how to build a better job, the trend of home buying among young professionals, and strategies for dealing with student loan debt, all of it timely. This hour, we preview that event by hitting those same subjects, as well as that broader question of why Americans' financial knowledge seems to be and declined. And by the way, you want to take that six-question quiz? Do it. I link to it on Twitter. You don't have to post results publicly. It's a lot of fun. So let's talk about all that and more this hour. A man who got 6 out of 6, Malik Evans. He's the Business Growth Program Manager at ESL. I sure hope you got 6 out of 6.
I hope so, too. Thanks for having me, Evan.
Chuck Wade is here, VP and Financial Advisor with Brighton Securities. You don't take that quiz and sweat, do you? Because you know you're going to...
I just really knew that I had to get 6 out of 6 correct.
Or it's over.
Or there was a problem.
Yeah, and you got 6.
I did.
Okay, good for you. I'm very proud of you.
I did.
Thanks for being here, Chuck. Andrew Brady's here with Rochester Young Professionals, and this event next Thursday night, you know, aimed at these topics, Andrew. How did it come together here, this Generation Listen event at WXXI?
Yeah, so the Generation Listen has really been something that they're working on to try to bring more of a conversation around, you know, not only listening to some of these pieces, but then having the discussion and creating that sort of learning community. And so we've been partnering with ESL for a little while now. They've been supporters of Rochester Young Professionals, and they reached out and wanted to see if we could bring them along, because really what we're doing with Rochester Young Professionals, I know probably about 10 years ago when we started, it was really we'd go to a bar for, you know, once a month, and there'd be a RYP social, and they got really well known. But when I joined the board, it was really when I saw that RYP was trying to be a little bit more than that. You know, how can we really have an impact on the community? How can we really help to evolve what the community is and what it can become? And so how can we help young professionals get there? And so this was a really great opportunity when ESL approached us for how we can engage our membership in something that hopefully can take something that might not be, you know, especially exciting to do on your own, just to go read a textbook and make it something where you can learn a little bit, but bring some friends along. And so we're excited to see where that goes and hopefully have it be the first of many of these kinds of events.
A Generation Listen event is designed to be social, fun. They'll be serving beer and drinks and whatnot, but also a chance to listen to, you know, it's not like sit and listen and study and take notes for 3 hours, but you will have a chance to listen to some NPR pieces on money. I don't know the full lineup of the content. Do you have that? Are you allowed to reveal, Andrew?
Yeah,
somewhere.
I can.
Why don't you pull that up?
Yeah,
because,
I will.
Because NPR does a lot, whether it's Marketplace and APM or Planet Money and its ilk. There's a lot out there, but they'll be listening to some of those events, and it should be fun, and it should be a chance to start a discussion. And Malik Evans, what are you hoping comes out of that event?
Well, I hope, you know, what comes out of the event is that folks get a chance and opportunity to network with folks who are professionals that will be able to give them advice on some of those things, but more importantly, to talk to each other about the key areas. So, you know, they're around strategies when you're saddled with student loan debt, how to build a better job, forget generation rent, and then the last segment is on making it. And all of these are NPR pieces. There will be short vignettes, and then we'll have kind of a conversation with the attendees that are there, and then go from there. And there'll be networking before and then networking afterwards. But I hope people leave with maybe having learned at least one or two new things that will be applicable to their daily lives.
Is there an age cap for RYP and for this event, Andrew?
We're very careful. We never set an age gap or an age cap rather. We really let people self-identify as young professionals, but especially for this event and this study seems to point that anybody can use this kind of advice. And I just wanted to add to the kind of event as well. Malik kind of talked about the topics, but we also have invited professionals coming. So we have folks that are, you know, benefits experts or real estate agents or, you know, have the different kinds of talents and skills where you could get a little bit of free advice, so to speak, have someone to talk to that really knows what they're doing. And so I think that makes it a little bit more accessible to young professionals. You know, we might not want to go walk into a someone's office and have to ask questions, but in this more low-key networking type of event, it's a forum to ask some of those questions.
I like allowing people to self-identify as a young professional, you know, because eventually, hopefully, people will be self-aware. If you're like 54 and you're kind of like the townie at the college bar, like, you know, at some point, you gotta cut that off. But for the most part, you know, I think that's a good strategy. And we should also mention, for the event next Thursday, it is free, but they do ask that you register in advance just so it doesn't get overrun. Where can people do that?
So there's if you go on the Facebook page, Us Millennials, that's where we find and organize a lot of our events. So
for RYP?
The RYP Facebook page has the Invested Millennial event. I believe they have it on the ESL Facebook page.
If you go
as well.
To ESL.org, it's right on the front main page. You can click on it and register. It takes exactly like 45 seconds.
Okay. So and it starts when?
It starts, I believe, at
5:30.
Okay. 5:30.
5:30 to 8:00.
5:30 to 8:00 next Thursday night for the Generation Listen event there, right here at WXXI. Should be fun. So let's talk about some of these issues that you're going to talk about and these broader themes of just basic financial literacy. I mean, Andrew, if somebody asks you, and you're how old, Andrew?
27.
27. Do you feel like you manage money pretty well?
You know, I'd like to think that I do. I've been lucky enough, you know, to stay out of any credit card debt or any of those sorts of things. But I'll be honest, you know, I bought a house a few years ago and I've college educated, all those sorts of things, and I really depended on, you know, having, you know, my parents had bought a house before, so I could rely on them for those sorts of things. So I really think about in terms of folks that maybe don't have that kind of support system and how they might be able to deal with some of these issues, because it's scary to sign a paper like that. And so to understand that, you know, even if it talks a little bit in the study about, you know, college educated versus not. But when I was thinking, when I read that, I was thinking about myself in college, and there was no financial literacy class in college. So, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, part of the curriculum, and maybe it should be.
Yeah, no doubt. In fact, we're starting to see East Rochester as an example. They're doing a Life 101 course for high school seniors starting this year. So it started now. We're seeing other districts do it. Chuck and Malik probably, I imagine you guys think it's about time.
This drives me nuts. I think public speaking is one that, you know, so you got to take a public speaking class when you go to college. I think it should be absolutely mandatory, high school and college, that there's a financial literacy class that's provided that covers the basic things. I mean, this quiz, this FINRA test, was a basic test, but it's obviously tough for a lot of people because these are things that you would learn in a basic class. I mean, so what is financial literacy? Andrew, you bought a house, you know, having an idea of how you can evaluate what your monthly mortgage payment actually consists of with student loans. I just had to go recertify my loan payment. It's an income-based plan. I had to go, well, how's that impacted? What are the other repayment options with respect to student loans? What is a 401k? What are these things? Why should I be putting some of my money into that now? What is a savings account? How is it different from a checking account? What is an overdraft fee? How does interest work? What is the advantage of prepaying an existing loan that you might have? There's so many topics that are so daunting. They were daunting to me as someone who left college and high school not with this kind of background, that I wish I knew a lot of the things I know now 10 or 15 years ago, because I would have made better decisions then.
Mm-hmm. Malik?
And you know, the challenge is to meet people at multiple levels, because you have some students, obviously, definitely need financial education in the schools, but also folks who aren't in schools because some of their parents are making terrible decisions, and just the general population, as evidenced by that study. So we have to find ways, and I know one of the things we try to do at ESL is find multiple ways to meet our clients and give them that what we call financial acumen, financial capability, because this study should be alarming to people, because it really gets to the financial health of individuals. You know, if you don't know, for example, what your basic credit score is, or some of the other things that just were mentioned, it could have detrimental effects on the rest of your life. So how can we make sure that people are aware of these things is something that we need to think about. The Generation Listen event is one example of that, but this has to be an ongoing, regularly conversation that continues to happen. It's best when you can start when they're young, but you have some folks that might be 50 or 60 who have made decisions that they now may come to regret because they did not have the knowledge earlier on in life.
That's a great point, because if we narrow our focus, you know, too tightly on this, then we miss the fact that, as the study showed, it's not just students, not just high school and college students or young adults or millennials. And then I think about this, Malik. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about the very latest from ACT Rochester on the poverty report, the newest poverty report. And we know the anti-poverty initiative is going to take years. They're not trying to do this overnight or in a year. But imagine we start to make progress. Imagine we start to put a dent in the poverty that has been plaguing our city and our region. And yet, imagine somebody who has find a way to pull themselves up out of poverty, but they don't have this kind of literacy, and they make a bad decision, and they either get taken advantage of, or they don't understand how certain things work. All of that work, could it not be compromised?
It could dissipate immediately. I mean, think about if you don't understand the importance of identity theft and how you work on preventing yourself from not getting identity theft. And when you think about financial health, there's kind of like four areas where if you can check a box, you're saying, okay, I'm on the right track, I'm doing the right thing. And it's like, do you feel as though you're in control? So you know how to budget. You can make your payments. You can absorb a financial shock. So your car breaks down and you have $500 saved. You know, you're okay. You can meet a financial, you're on track to meet a financial goal, and you have the flexibility to make choices. You can say, hey, I want to go on vacation or pay for my child's AP exam. If you don't have those, able to do those types of things, it could have really a tough effect on your overall financial health. And this is related to whether or not you make $50,000 a year or $250,000 a year. There are certain financial principles that all of us need to make sure that we understand. And it is daunting, particularly for younger people and even their parents. For example, if they've taken on student loan debt, they start to have questions about whether or not they should be saving in a 401k because they're, you know, they feel as though they're in a long-term relationship with Sallie Mae, so they don't have time to think about some of those things. So it's important that this topic, and I'm glad we're talking about it today, is elevated at a level where people really are tuning in, paying attention, and then doing something about it.
Chuck Wade?
And the answers to a lot of those questions you just posed are simple.
Right.
And they're not huge. It seems daunting. It says, well, I want to go on a trip that's going to cost a couple $1,000. Well, it sounds like a lot of money, but if you break it down to, well, this is how much money per day I actually need to save to be able to do that, and you think, oh, if I can save $5 a day,
exactly,
in a year, I could do that. So maybe I don't buy a cup of coffee in the morning, and I don't buy the bagel. One small change can lead to such a massive shift in people's financial health, but they don't know. And it seems so daunting. And that is what the information is so important. And just the knowledge of how a couple of little changes can make such big impacts for you in your intermediate future, within 1 to 5 years, but also within your down the road future. We're talking 10, 15, 20 years down the road. These little shifts can lead to such massive changes down the road, and people just don't know.
And I just want to ask Chuck and Malik, and this is not a billboard advertisement for what Chuck does at Brighton Securities or Malik at ESL, but an honest question. You know, Malik said it doesn't matter if you're making $250,000 or $50,000, or you're literally just pulling yourself out of poverty. This kind of knowledge and planning can help everybody. But sometimes I think people think, and I'm trying to kind of get into the psychology, that maybe I should not do that, but sometimes doesn't it seem, Malik, that people think, well, I'm not making X. Why would I need to know about X? Or I'm
That's exactly right, Evan. I think that, and you know, I love talking to young people in particular. For example, a student that has a summer job and they may be making $50 a week, and I go through and I say, hey, do you have an RG&E payment? Do you have a cell phone? And they say no. And I say, that means that you should be saving at least $10 a week because you don't have these ancillary payments. You don't have diapers to pay for. So you could be socking away more money. Now, if you're making more money, obviously you're able to do more. But the most important thing is that you have a budget and that you have a plan. And all the data shows that people who have a budget or plan, they tend to save hundreds of dollars more than, say, someone who doesn't have a plan. I saw one study a couple of years ago that said someone who had no plan saved maybe on average about $75 a month, where someone who had a budgeting plan and a savings plan saved almost $335 sure. a month. So if you have a plan, regardless of the amount of money that you're making, you will be able to be much better off. And the other point I'll make is that it goes back to my other point of $50,000 or $250,000. It may be less that you're socking away, but you're still getting in the habit of doing some type of savings vehicle, be it in your 401k, but also in your rainy day fund, because you should always have a fund or a savings for when that unexpected things happen, a loss of a job, an event can absolutely destroy us financially. You lose a job, someone gets sick, you get in an accident, your car breaks down. All those things could be major financial shocks to the system. And how would you, everyone should ask themselves, how would I absorb that shock if it happens to us? And we know the answer for many people because they now find themselves in mountains of debt.
Yep.
And it's unable for them to climb out of it.
Or you have to remove asbestos from your basement. That was last week at my house.
So you know
when
firsthand.
When you have two little kids, you think, okay, well, we need to do this now.
Right.
How are we going to do it? And, you know, one of the things that we use the term millionaire a lot. You think $1 million is a lot of money. If I was to bring in a couple of my clients that are millionaires and say, pick the millionaire, I think you would have a tough time because they'd be in jeans. They'd be in non-name brand clothing. They would, and if I showed you their houses and say, pick the millionaire, they live in ranch houses. They don't drive Porsches. They don't drive BMWs. They drive Chevys. They drive Fords, Kias. Said, pick the millionaire. You wouldn't be able to pick them. You know why? None of them have made a lot of money on an annual basis, but they've saved. They've stayed out of debt. They have lived beneath their means for a long period of time, and those are the ones that are the best clients. My best client, some of my best clients are farmers. Farmers live beneath their means. They live simple lives. But you know what? They're thinking about, they're trained to think like that. You're thinking, well, what if the rain doesn't come? What am I going to do? Yep. What if these things happen? Those, my best clients, you would not think, oh, that person's got a lot of money in the bank. Because that's how they live their lives.
It's a great, great point there. We're talking to Chuck Wade, VP and Financial Advisor with Brighton Securities, Malik Evans, Business Growth Program Manager at ESL, and Andrew Brady's in studio from Rochester Young Professionals. RYP and ESL has this event, Generation Listen event, right here at WXXI Studios next Thursday night. Starts at 5:30, goes to about 8. They're going to listen to some NPR programming. It is not a come and sit and listen to 3 hours of NPR programming. It's kind of quick vignettes, that kind of a thing. A little later in the hour, we'll kind of hit you with some of the list there, but starting points for conversation about especially how young professionals are thinking about home buying, loan debt, those kind of things. Great chance, as Malik said, to network, also to hear some great programming, to think, to talk, and to connect. And the phones are blown up, so why don't we take a few phone calls? I'm going to start with Bernard in Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, and I want to be careful here because I don't want to insult anybody, but I just have a general question about people teaching someone else financial. For example, when you go to a financial expert to quote-unquote teach you about finance, don't they have a personal objective in terms of teaching you? So how do you teach, or can you guarantee that when you're teaching somebody about financials, you're teaching them something that's true? Because if you go to a bank and talk to them about financials, they have their objective, and their objective is to not give you the best financial information. It's to give you the best informational information that will benefit them. And when we went bankrupt or recession in 2008, 2009, a lot of CFAs went bankrupt too. So So I just have a question about, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but my question is, how can we trust the system that they're actually going to teach people for the benefit of the people as opposed to the benefit of the industry?
Yeah,
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
Thank you, Bernard.
I think that's a great question. And I think I know one of the things we do at ESL Federal Credit Union, for example, is we partner with community-based organizations that are independent, that have a track record of working with individuals to help them with budgeting, basic financing. We do a lot with consumer credit counseling, for example. So I think that there are standard items that are basic that really a banker or financial advisor would not put you in a negative position. Like, for example, you should save something every month. If your employer offers a 401k match, you should take advantage of it. That you should not take a high interest credit card, that you should not sign with someone who's saying they're going to give you a credit card for 50%. So I think there's standard things that are that are agreed upon in societies that people think are good. And what we're talking about, I think, with Generation Listen and other things, is not product pushing, but standard basic education things that go beyond just not only financial institutions, but just general good principles that all people should try to subscribe to in order to make sure that they have a strong financial future and that they are able to say, okay, my financial situation is healthy. Like, for example, checking your credit report every month. There's no downside to that. I mean, every year, to knowing what your credit score is. Those are all things that are important. I always joke with millennials in particular. I say, hey, before you marry someone, you may want to ask them how much money they have in their bank account. Say, hey, what's your credit score? What's your score? You know, because something like that is extremely important. It can relate to your job. Some jobs look at credit. When you're buying a house, obviously your credit is important. When you're going with a credit card, so those things are, I think, the things that we're talking about here today, not particular products or our own particular bent, but I would call them universal financial principles that really can help people stay strong and build a strong financial future.
And you always have the option to speak to multiple people.
Right.
I tell folks all the time, you know, go around, Google financial advisor, Rochester, New York. You're going to find pages upon pages of us, of people that can do that. And the other thing is, a lot of time you come in, nobody's handing you a bill to come in and sit down and ask questions. Check around. Get multiple opinions. This business is a lot like, you know, your doctor may be different than someone else's doctor. They're going to have different methods of practicing. Generally, the objective is the same. And our objective in most cases is usually, well, what does the client need? Because you have different objectives. Someone might be looking to save for college. Someone's concerned with retirement. We have folks that come in and say, I don't have any money to save. I have credit card debt. Can you help me? Yeah, absolutely. So the objectives are different all the time, but you can always go multiple places, get multiple opinions, and then decide to work with somebody that you feel most comfortable with.
And I think that's part of the idea with this event as well. You know, I think that people are a little bit hesitant to walk into an office, you know, whether or not that's, you know, the case, that's the perception, is that, you know, they don't want to be sold to. And so I think that with this event, if we give people an opportunity, you know, there's going to be some invited professionals there. There's going to be some educational components to listen to. Hopefully they can get some advice, lower the barriers to entry, so to speak. You know, we really want them to just start thinking about some of these things and talking about it, getting some advice so that they are at least starting to get started down that path of learning some things that they need to know that could end up, you know, saving them thousands of dollars or, you know, to some of the points that were made, how much that really cruise over time.
Okay, so the hour is flying. Keith and Joe on the phones. We're going to get to you after our short break. Cindy and others who have just been dying for us to post this quiz, and several saying, they don't do Twitter. Where's this quiz? So Megan Mack, our producer, has been dutifully trying to keep up with the emails who want to find the quiz. But I've got the questions. Maybe in our second half hour we'll walk through, because I think some of them are illustrative of some of the questions and places where people get tripped up. So maybe we'll hit some of the quiz in the second half hour. So we're talking about money, managing your money, understanding what to do with it, especially for young professionals, but for everybody. The Generation Listen event next Thursday. That's 8 days from now. Malik Evans will be there. He's the Business Growth Program Manager at ESL. Andrew Brady will be there with Rochester Young Professionals. Chuck Wade's here. He's a VP and Financial Advisor with Brighton Securities, and we'll get right back to it next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, a lot of focus on the presidential race, and understandably so. But what about down-ballot issues? Why is turnout so poor in non-presidential elections and the primaries, things like that? We talk about everything but the presidential race and down-ballot elections. Then in our second hour, a new poverty report. What kind of progress are we making or not? Talk with you Thursday. Hi, welcome back to Connections. If you're just joining us, this Generation Listen event next Thursday night at WXXI. They'd like you to register in advance. You can check out the Rochester Young Professionals Facebook page, also ESL online.
ESL.org.
ESL.org, because there's like 6,000 people signed up for RYP, and we would love to handle 6,000 people. We'll probably have that many at the open house on Saturday, but that would not be good for next Thursday.
No.
But we'd love to pack it. So just register in advance for that. And some of what you're going to listen to, Malik Evans, you got a list there. What are some of the things you'll be listening to?
So we'll be listening to things, you know, little vignettes. They won't be long. You know, they're usually about 4 to 5 minutes. Strategies when you're saddled with student loan debt. How to build a better job. Forget Generation Rent, which hits on home ownership. And then there's a section on making it, which is which comes from StoryCorps, which is something that those like me that love listening to WXXI hears in the morning with NPR. So there's and that's how we kind of end the night with that section.
All right, so you'll be able to listen to StoryCorps, but that'll probably be, I don't know exactly how long it'll be. It's not going to be that long. Everyone will stop what they're doing, grab a drink, listen, chat. It's a good starting. That's why some of the other vignettes, other reporting, you know, the marketplace, that kind of stuff. It's not too long. It's just great starting off points for themes and discussions. I want to get back to your phone calls. And Keith in Farmington now. Go ahead, Keith.
Evan, interesting show. A couple of things that your guests haven't touched on, and I got an answer to Bernard. He wants, I believe anybody can call themselves a financial planner. There's different certifications to be a certified financial planner. I know it's different. And to be a CFA is different too. But anybody can put a shingle out and say, I'm a financial planner. To answer Bernard's question about how can you go to somebody without them with the worry of them trying to sell you something you don't need. Most CFPs, certified financial planners, are fiduciaries, meaning they have to act in your best interest. So if they look at your assets and say, well, you should have some life insurance because if you were to die unexpectedly, you may not have the money available in liquid form to pay the pending tax bill that your estate may have. So therefore, you should go out and get some life insurance. They're not going to sell you the product. And a lot of times what Bernard brought up does happen. But the one thing your guests haven't touched on, which is probably the best thing any millennial, anybody could do, is to pay off their credit card. Because you're getting a return by paying off your credit card anywhere from 9% to 23-27%. And nobody's touched on that. You can put $10 a week aside for a rainy day. But if your credit card bill is, you know, $200 or $300, you're probably paying $110 a month just in interest. So it would be incumbent upon you to get your credit card debt paid off ASAP and use it only in emergencies.
Keith, thanks for the phone call. Malik, Chuck, how do you feel about credit card debt? That's credit card debt and loan debt are both over what, $1 trillion?
Oh yeah, I mean it's an issue obviously, and again that I didn't touch on it specifically, but one of the things I think that's part of budgeting, and you can use a credit card when you need it, but absolutely you should work to pay down your credit card debt and you know all your debts work to pay them down. I think that's absolutely absolutely important, and that ties directly to this notion that I said earlier of creating a budget, because if you stay within budget, you may not need to use a credit card. But if you are using it, you want to make sure that you use it responsibly. You know, for example, one of the products that we offer at ESL is a secure credit card, which allows you to use your own money to build credit that a lot of millennials like. So you're not getting yourself in mountains of debt. So yeah, there are your debt to income and all that stuff is extremely extremely important. And I agree with the caller. Absolutely, you want to make sure you pay down your credit card debt.
Okay. Yeah, Jack? It's part of the financial axis of evil.
Right.
That's what I've termed calling it. And I think that yeah, we've mentioned paying off your debts and credit cards are a huge issue. Student loan debt actually in America is almost twice what the outstanding credit card debt is. So they're both huge issues, but student loans are...
So what's the axis of evil? You're going to do all three for me? What other?
Well, I've always considered, I think that credit card debt, student loan debt can be, and you know, the other one, I don't have a third for it yet. I've always just called it the axis of evil because I've liked that term, and I think they're that bad if you're not able to manage them responsibly. It's a huge problem for folks, but oftentimes, while it does make the most sense, in some cases, it may not be the most pressing issue. It really depends on the individual, but it's credit cards. I don't like them because a lot of folks struggle to own them responsibly. I mean, they're great. If you want to buy a Southwest credit card, you can rack up, you know, my brother and his wife just did it. They racked up. They flew to Disney World for free, and they were responsible about it. My brother does the same thing I does across the hall, but they were responsible about it. You can get into trouble pretty quickly with that, and the feeling of being underwater with credit card debt can be pretty daunting.
It's been a longer for me than Andrew. Our days in college. I still remember, though, people just set up tables on the main street at Ohio University, walking down Court Street, and how many tables were set up. People handed out bottles of Pepsi t-shirts. And all T-shirts.
Beach towels.
Yep. And, you know, all kinds of things just to try to get you to sign up for a credit card. Was that like that? Do you remember that?
You know, not as much. I was down the road at Cornell. We didn't have
Oh, you cultured people down
there. No, not at all. We didn't have the credit card, and I'm wondering whether that's, you know, been curbed.
Yeah, after
somewhat,
the financial crisis, but, that was that.
Okay,
that was
so they're not are they not allowed to be as aggressive?
No, I saw them at Progressive Field last Sunday in Cleveland.
Okay.
Yeah, they're definitely still at sports arenas. But I think about, you know, Malik was talking about all the different topics that we're covering, and we generally don't set a hard cutoff for young professionals, but we generally, you know, in the 20 to say 40-ish range, there's you know, so many different decisions that you are making. So it's really difficult to, whether it's buying a house or, you know, you have a kid and you want to save for their college, all these different decisions that you're making. There's so many different things in that 20-year lifespan that for young professionals, but obviously it continues beyond that, that become really big issues for people. But then I think, you know, sometimes they come into their time as young professionals, you know, fresh out of college maybe, and they have all the student loan debt. So sometimes by the time they become so-called young professionals, it's too late by then. And so that's why I think, you know, getting down to some of the younger students in high school curriculum, those sorts of things. I know there's programs like Junior Achievement goes in and teaches about business and entrepreneurship and financial literacy. And there's a lot of other, you know, similar organizations in town where how can we get young people to at least be aware of this, because sometimes they're making some of the biggest financial decisions of their life at age, you know, 18 when they're deciding to go to school and where to go to school and whether to go to a state school or not and applying for financial aid, all those sorts of things.
Okay, well, I'm looking at just at the quiz here, and for all of you who've been writing me saying, well, what's on the quiz? It's only five questions. You know, on this question on understanding interest rates, you know, Keith is saying, understand that, you know, your monthly payment, you're paying a lot more in interest. It's the same way, sort of front loading. Most mortgages front loaded with interest. Is there any mortgage that's not front loaded with interest? I don't think so, right?
No.
There are interest only mortgages, which our advisors probably love. But here's one of the questions from the quiz: true or false? A 15-year mortgage typically requires higher monthly payments than a 30-year mortgage, but the total interest over the life of the loan will be less. I got to that question. I went, yeah, of course. And I'm going, how many people? That's amazing. That should be obvious, right? That's one of the advantages of paying down early. But that was one where apparently some people struggled. And the New York Times says only 28% of people got right. The worst performance on any question was a question that our friend Steven on Twitter says tripped him up. He said he got 5 out of 6. And here it is. It's the question on, if interest rates rise, what will typically happen to bond prices? Rise, fall, stay the same, or there is no relationship? That was a tougher one. And Chuck and Malik, you were saying you weren't surprised that was the toughest one for people?
I looked at that and thought that's a tough question for people who don't...
Right. Don't live in your world?
Don't know, or don't, because how would you know? You have to think, you have to really think that one through. And the answer is that as interest rates go up, bond prices will fall. And so often folks will say, well, what does that mean? Well, that has a huge impact on folks' retirement accounts. If you own bonds and fixed income instruments, things that are meant to pay you interest that you live off of, well, if interest rates go up, which Janet Yellen's going to be out in about 19 minutes to talk about what's going to happen this month.
Give or take.
How is that going to impact retirees who have money in bonds? Well, it will. And if interest rates go up, folks will typically see the value of their accounts go down.
Right. And something like that is important because it affects everyone, right? Governments, people, individuals. So a question like that is, but it's difficult to understand. And I would understand, and I think folks need to understand why it's important and why all those questions are important. But again, I think this whole thing gets to, again, my point around financial health and why it's important that people understand it. I always joke and say, you know, people spend more time figuring out who their friends are going to be on Facebook or how long they're going to take a vacation than they do planning or budgeting or thinking about their future. So I think that Times article and those questions really reinforce the importance of making sure that people educate themselves and that those of us that are interested in financial health work to really ensure that we participate in events like this ESL Young Professionals events and others where financial literacy is taking place, because it really does have an effect on people's lives for the long haul.
Let's talk about millennials right now, someone who's looking to go buy a home for the first time. If interest rates go up, a 30-year mortgage right now is right around 4%. It's going to have that impact's going to be
right,
thousands
exactly.
of dollars to someone
right.
who if interest rates were to go up, if the mortgage rate goes to 4.5%, that's thousands of dollars over the life of a 30-year mortgage more that you're going to pay in interest. That you will never see.
Right.
You're just gonna. That's your cost for being able to have a mortgage. It's
but Chuck and Malik, don't you think when a lot of people, and again, I'm not casting any sort of blame. I probably was in this category when I was first looking at home buying. They think, well, 4%, 4.25%, 5%, 6%. It all sounds roughly the same. It doesn't seem like, well, it's not 4% to 30%. So, I don't think that immediately hits people. That there can be a big difference when it looks smaller.
Over time?
Yeah.
Over time, right? But it also helps you get into the mindset of, man, maybe if interest rates are going to go up, maybe I should start saving now for a home as opposed to later. So, it's important to understand that. But I could, folks may not, if they're not steeped in this stuff, this is why education is so important. It might say, oh, 4.25%, 5%, oh, no big deal, I won't worry about it. But you're right, it is. It makes an impact and it makes a difference. And that's why it's so important that that we work hard to encourage people to seek information, ask questions. As one of the callers said, ask questions. To Chuck's point, interview different people, find out about what's best for you. It's just key.
Who in this room knew what your student loan interest payment was going to be when you signed 4 years before you graduated?
Right.
I will put my hand up that I had no idea.
Sure.
But it's not four.
Right.
It's 7.5. That's what we're talking about, is things like that you have no idea. It's easy to overlook that because nobody knows.
All right, and that's, if you're just joining us, back to the phones we go. If you're just joining us, we're talking about financial literacy, particularly for young adults, young professionals, Rochester Young Professionals, holding this event at WXXI next Thursday night. That is the 29th, starting at 5:30 right here at WXXI Studios. It's free. It's going to be a lot of fun. Just ask you to register in advance for that. But we're also just talking in general about American adults and our knowledge. The new FINRA study, more than 25,000 people, 81% of Americans will tell you that, yeah, they do a good job handling their finances, but only 37% of them can do better than, 2.9 out of 6? Or essentially 37% are passing a short basic financial literacy quiz. So what we think we know is not matched by what we actually know. Back to the phones, and this is Joe in Webster. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, thank you. Great show. I have a question. Did anyone get a chance to see the interview, so to speak, of John Stump of Wells Fargo yesterday and regarding their shenanigans and the effect on credit scores?
Yeah, saw it. I mean, certainly saw that. There's a lot of people sharing certain clips of that. Yeah.
I can't speak to the credit score part of it, but I watched about 5 minutes of Senator Warren and thought, wow, she really eviscerated this guy. And he had it coming. And he didn't have any answers for her.
If you're, you know, well, here's what baffles me, and this is a totally aside to this. If you're going to go sit in front of Elizabeth Warren, yeah, wouldn't you think you're a little better prepared than that guy was? What in the world was he thinking? I mean, did he never, like, Google Elizabeth Warren, man? Anyway, go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
No, that was my basic point. Just a quick story. I mean, I'm 58 years old. I started out, I paid for college myself, and I tell the kids that I work with, because I work part-time at a big box store, but I work full-time as a for a healthcare company. I was making $9 an hour, work union wages. You know, you had shift differential, things of that nature. You work Sundays, you got double time. I was heaven, you know, paid for my college back then. This year, or now, it wouldn't even pay for your books. But to your guys' point, you know, people need to save, but you're living from paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, these kids today are making $9, $10 an hour, where I was making that back in the 70s. So, you know, with inflation and everything else, you know, wages just haven't kept pace.
Yeah, that's true. And, Joe, thanks for the phone call. In terms of income inequality, it is more extreme now than it's been than at any point since World War II, which is just another good reason why this failure of education about financial literacy hurts people. Because you're right, there's more money concentrated at the top, and there's people struggling. And if they're trying to make the most of every dollar and they're not financially literate, it can only be harder. So, Joe, thanks for the phone call. Steven on Twitter follows up to say, higher interest rates tighten the money supply and newer bonds become more valuable as money costs more. I hope that's right.
Oh,
that's correct.
That's right. Yeah. He might have a job as a professor soon of finance.
See, there you go, Steven. So, and again, if a couple other people asking, where's the quiz? We'll also post on the podcast page, right? Megan Mack, producer Megan Mack, is going to make sure that we post that. My voice is about to go. So you don't have to be on the campaign trail to lose a voice. So let me kick the next question out there on home buying. Andrew mentioned it. It's going to be coming up next week. Megan Mack may be finishing this program in a second. We'll see. That's coming up. How much do you think you and your peers at RYP are looking at home buying? And do you feel pushed to buy? Are you feeling like rent is throwing your money away? And I'd like to hear your answer and then how Chuck and Malik would address that for those who view home buying as a smarter way to manage money.
Yeah, I mean, I think that has been a big theme, certainly talked about a lot among millennials, and there's also a question of whether the reason for that is because of all the student loan debt and they're just not able to buy homes, or if they're just waiting to buy them later. I know that for me, psychologically, it always felt that I was throwing my money away when I was putting it to rent. So I think that there's those kinds of factors that come in, because, you know, to be perfectly honest, you know, in terms of my own financial literacy, I did want to buy a home, and I did feel like throwing my money, you know, towards rent was throwing it away. But I'm not sure that I ever did any kind of financial calculation to see whether or not that was truly the right decision.
Okay, well then let's hear from Chuck and Malik on how you work with people, young professionals, but everybody who feel that way, who feel like I can't keep renting, that's throwing money away.
Yeah, I think a lot of the times, buying a home, there's a tradition that comes along with it, that for so long that was the American dream to own a home. I think if you want to own a home, great, let's find a way to do it, and you can. But I don't think there's anything wrong with renting. Renting is also much more hassle-free than owning a home, as anyone who owns a home will know. So I think that you need to know what you're getting into, but that, you know, I don't try to push people away from renting unless they're saying, yeah, I want to own a home, but they want to own it for the right reasons, not just because they think that they should. And I feel like that has always been steeped in the American tradition that owning a home is part of who we are. Yeah, absolutely. But if you don't want to own a home, that's okay too. You know, and if you do, be aware of what it entails.
Exactly. I think that's a great point. But I think one of the things is you have to look at, again, your overall goals, your overall financial health, and what is best for you. Are you going to just buy a home, but then you're looking to move to New York City or L.A. in 6 months? That might not make the best sense. But if you're looking maybe to put down roots, or you are making big money, so you're looking for some kind of tax write-off, you may want to look at doing that. But I think overall, the most important point is that if you're owning a home, number one, you have to understand what you're getting yourself into. Because if you're going to have that mortgage payment, remember, you're still going to have taxes. You still may have repairs that may come up. You may have changes that you want to have in a house. So that's why the education piece is so important. But I think it's really a personal decision in terms of home ownership. But I will say that when you look at America and kind of the American dream, we sometimes debate what does that really mean. But two of the things that have been cornerstones to the American dream for a long time has been home ownership and business ownership. Now, how you get to those places are important. And the journey that you take is important. But one of the most important things a person can do is educate themselves to make sure that they don't get themselves into something that in the long term may have a negative effect on their overall financial health.
And here's one thing that I wonder if it has changed since I was Andrew's age or younger. When I was in college or just out, a financial advisor told me, you know, buy a house that you can barely afford now, because hopefully your earning power should keep going up and it won't be a strain in 5 years, and it'll be an easy payment in 10.
Right.
And with a little bit of stagnant wages, is that the same kind of advice? I mean, I don't know if you've heard anything like that. Have you heard something like that?
Well, so that was basically what my parents did, and they were lucky enough that it worked out for them. But I personally would be very nervous to take on something like that these days, even though, you know, I'd like to think that my salary and my wages will increase, but you know, it's I think a different world than it was.
Okay.
It sends my heart rate up a few beats.
To hear that?
Yeah. And the way things are now, I would tell someone, I'd say, hey, look, you know, buy a home that you know you can afford. I remember when we got pre-approved for a mortgage, they pre-approved us for $150,000 more than we wanted to spend. And I thought, well, why? And I could see how you could get into trouble because you think, well, we could afford this home, but you might be stretching yourself. Times have changed in that regard.
Okay, Malik?
No, again, I think it is extremely important this is why a budget is so important. Now, we went over some of the numbers of people who didn't answer those questions right. Go in a room and ask folks, how many of you have a monthly budget? And the answers would be, you know, few and far between. Most Americans don't have a budget. So as a result of that, they may go and sometimes purchase a home that they may be approved for or that they can't afford, and they're stretching themselves. So I always tell younger people in particular, it's okay if you're starting out with a starter home and then your earning power may increase. But you have to be very careful to make sure that whatever it is you're paying, not just in mortgage, but also in rent, is not way too much of your income, because you want to still be able to save, and you still want to be able to maybe take a trip when you want to, maybe be able to contribute to your retirement. And if you buy something that is way out of your league or out of your means, because we live in a society where we want to continuously compare ourselves, keeping up with the Joneses was the saying back in the day, you can find yourself, I think, in deep, deep trouble later on down the line.
This is a real quick anecdote. I have a colleague of mine, very successful. He's been very successful for over 30 years in our business. And I walk into his office, and he every morning, the first thing he does is look at his bank account. And I said, why do you look at your bank account every day? He goes, I just need to know where I stand.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is somebody that if he wanted to go to Fiji tomorrow for a month, it would not be an issue. But he just likes to know where he stands.
It's a little obsessive, but it beats not knowing where you stand.
But I get why he's doing it.
It beats not knowing where you stand at all. By the way, I think people still say keeping up with the Joneses. Andrew, have you ever heard that phrase?
Oh, yeah.
You're 27. You've heard that.
Yes,
all right,
sir.
Good. Okay, good. I'm at that.
Yes,
hey, I'm still a millennial, by the way. Well, I guess I'm kind of.
No.
I'm still young. I'm
you
a young professional.
You can self-identify.
I'm a young professional.
Young at
you
heart.
Self-identify
yeah.
as a young professional.
Absolutely.
Yes, Malik.
Absolutely.
Yes, me too, by the way.
24 years old I am.
Yeah. I'm going to steal one more quick phone call. We got to keep it tight. Tom in Rochester. Go ahead, Tom.
I've read several books about financial preparing, which has to do with emergency funds, saving $10,000 to $20,000, saving for retirement. You buy a house, pay it off as soon as you can, and set it for 30 years. And try to take a course on it so that you can talk to the financial instructor and everybody else in the class.
That's the, well, but thank you, Tim, but is there a course? That's one of the questions I have here. We talked about the fact that more high schools are doing it. Chuck, is there a
Yeah, there
a
are.
Cor-
you know what?
Courses?
We live in Brighton, and I know that there's one offered. It's at night. I mean, it's through the Brighton Brighton Recreation or whatever. It's offered. There's a financial advisor that teaches it. It's free, I believe. and you can go, and it touches on the basics. What Tom just mentioned is what it teaches. So yeah, you got to look, but they're out there.
Okay,
yeah, absolutely. There's tons of organizations that make financial education and health part of their mission, and you know, it's something that we support wholeheartedly. But they're out there. You have to look for them. The key is, I think, people taking the time to really want to go out and really, really educate themselves on financial literacy and improving your financial health. But the investment is a great payoff in the future for you.
In Rochester Young Professionals, we have monthly professional development events. We're always looking for topics that young professionals would be interested in. And so I'm hoping that there's, you know, enough of enthusiasm after this Generation Listen event that we could do some more in-depth type of things, because that's really what we want to do is give them the opportunities. And like we mentioned, there's a lot of different decisions that you're making at different points in your life. And so there's a lot of different ways we could go with it, but we're happy to help.
And I'm just going to stress, you know, not on behalf of RYP or ESL, but just in general, especially if you're in a 20-something listening to this program, you're thinking about going to the Generation Listen event next Thursday at 5:30 to 8, you don't have to come in with a lot of knowledge. In fact, there's sometimes a pride barrier, but there's a lot of people who don't know a lot, and I've been there, and there's a lot I don't know. But if you feel like you can't show up at an event like this because you don't know a lot, that's not the point at all. I know Andrew Brady from RYP would love to see you there. Sign up in advance, either through the RYP Facebook page or ESL.org.
Here we go.
All right, Malik Evans will be there as well from ESL. Thank you for being here, Malik. Nice seeing you.
Thank you for having me. Good seeing you again.
Andrew Brady, we'll see you next Thursday night right here at WXXI.
Looking forward to it.
Have fun with that. And Chuck Wade, VP and Financial Advisor with Brighton Securities. Always good, Chuck. Thank you very much.
The pleasure's mine.
Rob Braden, engineer. Megan Mack is the producer of this broadcast. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon, and we'll talk with you Thursday on member-supported public radio.